It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Please, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Spavinaw, Oklahoma, where we are in the middle of Midfest. And last night, you know, Derek Bros and Miriam.
Yes.
Right? And we've crossed paths around the country. When they were in Mexico doing the Greater Reset, we were in Austin, Texas with John Bush up there. Participating there, making signs and speaking and talking about community and so on. And then in Sholo, Arizona, northeastern Arizona, an event up there with Derek and Miriam that went well. And then we saw them next day or two later in Sedona, Arizona. You know, that was awesome. And then they went on to Portland while we went to Prescott, Arizona, where some good news there. They're saying they're going to shut down the hospital, and what they were going to do is just fire everybody that didn't do the vaccine or so, and they'll just ship patients down to Phoenix or go over to Cottonwood, another small town in the same county. Where, and they're finding out that a lot of people aren't taking the vaccines there either. So what we did, put signs up, gave a lot of people signs. They've been, you know, hundreds, made a lot of them, and they kept some in reserve because I told them, I said, you put them up, they'll take them down. You put them up, they take them down. You put them up, they take them down. You go and hold them on the corners, you know, they'll, you know, yell at you and you don't care. I mean, so they've been doing that for a long time ever since then, and it's been a couple of months. And what happened was they pushed it back from September 22nd, said, okay, November 1st. November 1st, you have until you got to get your shots and so on. And a bunch of people filed exemptions or I ain't doing it or whatever. And then they go, all right, February 1st. We'll do it. We really mean it this time on February 1st. So, you know, they kind of held them off on that. So support first responders to say no to mandatory shots. I tell you, it's a general public opinion thing. You know, it always has been. So that's where we're at on that. And last night, Derek Bros and Miriam did kind of the same presentation. They do different groups. Like the one in Sholo is more of a Christian-oriented, small-town, Republican, patriot. You know, we got our own little farm thing, and which is cool. You know, I know a lot of the people. And then we went to Sedona, which is more, you know, barefoot yoga mat kind of thing, which was cool. They got the same message and so on. Yeah, it was a little bit different flavor and so on, but you know, with your homies, you know, like here at Midfest, they kind of get it and understand already in the process doing a lot of the things that you're doing. It was probably the best presentation that I've seen by both the right centering, you know, the right mindset, the right tone, the right. It's just, I really enjoyed it. It was awesome.
It's so powerful. Powerful.
Yeah, it was good. But, you know, what's been the draw here, a lot of people, did you go to Jackalope?
I did, but I wasn't there that long.
So this has been, you know, a lot of people at MidFest, you know, are attendees of Jackalope.
Yep.
And Jackalope is what inspired Mike Swatek to do this. And he goes, well, you just, like, say you're going camping and you have a place, like, take care of everything. You don't have to organize nothing. He goes, I can do that. You know, which is what we did. Hell, we didn't even have a campground. It was just forest. You know, dry camping, go out, and you're lucky we got porta potties because, you know, Jack did it. You know, he paid crypto and nobody knows who, whatever. So this has been an experience over the year because we're 10th year in the Jackalope. And the reason we did it is because, you know, some of the other festivals, and I've been around a long time, I can see the cycles that come. They get too organized, they get popular, and they die, you know. And a lot of times you almost see it's like by intent. You know, it gets infiltrated. You get the right troll. I mean, these guys must get paid. I mean, you know, because they go around, which is another thing, you know, scuttlebutt working on software to out the social pass. So we had a conversation with Al. Now, Al Fritz is a is in real estate in Colorado.
Correct.
Okay, so that's your main thing.
30-plus.
I'm sorry?
30-plus.
Years?
Yes.
Okay, so it's been a while.
Yeah.
Now, the one thing that's kind of cool is it's called, you know, Hoosball. Now, what this is, and I just, we got some slides that we'll show you, but what is so cool about this is Donna and I saw this online years ago that we put on Freedom's Phoenix, and the thing is that people are the players in this foosball arena. What is that? Oh, it's a motorcycle. Oh, yeah. It's a race car.
Oh, that's right. It's
the race car over here. That, you know, like,
this could be noisy.
50 feet long thing, and he was complaining I was taking up space. Anyway, so the there's some NASCAR thing going around here or dirt trick something. So what happened is Donna and I saw this, and we go, oh man, our family would have a freaking blast with that. That'd be awesome, you know. So we were talking to Al. And this, we'll get on this a little bit because this is kind of cool, you know, it might be fun. But I wanted to get more into how he got in the movement, why he went to Jackalope, how he made it to Midfest. You know, does he have friends and family that share his views? Is he looking to move? What's the draw? Why is he spending time here? What's he plan on doing with it? And the talk of community is like a big thing. And we're focused now on the housing aspect, the building of the domes, the aircrete and graphene-infused, blah, 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 blah. And I've always wanted to do that. We've been doing the geodesic dome for over a decade. We've been playing with all kinds of different things. Now that as the Love Bus Liberty Tour starts to, you know, finish up by the end of the year, we need to be ready to start mass-producing quality domiciles. You know, my domicile or free domes, and you know, we got a bunch of sites. You know, I bought a bunch of stuff. So
perfect.
So we're going to be, what's the word? Perfecting the method by which to do it and building the machines. Now it has been, it's really in its infancy now. I just want everybody to know that there's not a lot of, the only ones that have the machines like what I want come out of Russia. I'm going, really? You know, it's China or Russia. You freaking kidding me? You know, and there's reasons for it because, you know, the man don't want you making cheap homes. All right, so let's go ahead and talk to Al. Now, Al, let's go ahead and get on this hoosball thing. Now, to describe it, it's a big giant foosball thing that, you know, people are the players.
Correct.
And it's awesome. Looks like just lots of loads of fun. Right. And so
kicking
much,
good fun.
Well, it's like Donna and I were thinking of making, because we had, you know, extra land that we could put one on where we were at, and it had probably like a big quarter-acre field that we had. The kids did everything, you know, played soccer, had parties, did whatever the hell they wanted to do, and rider motorcycles, I mean, all kinds of stuff. So this would have been perfect for all our family gatherings and a lot of the parties that we had done, and I looked at it, and I go, damn. Especially in today's prices, that'd be thousands of dollars in materials.
It is.
You know? So it's like you take a 4x8 sheet of plywood, put it sideways, make a barrier, and you probably do it 4x4s or 2x4s.
4x4s. Hold
really,
the posts,
right?
Yeah.
So you put it all around, you got a wall, then you put the
bars pipe, through the 4x4s, correct.
You know, and then you're playing.
Yeah, well, and the bars are metal, and then you've got a plastic PVC that slides on the bar. And that's how you...
Rules are, our hands got to be on the bar.
That's correct, yes. Yep. And obviously the goalie has one person. The next is two people on the opposite team against the goalie. And then there's three people on the goalie's team that are going the other way, and then it's obviously reversed in the other direction. So it's exactly like foosball.
Okay, how long ago did you do this?
Well, we are on our sixth court, building our sixth court, and we started in 2019, actually,
wow,
on our first courts.
I saw these before then.
Well, I know, and they are that my partner, his name is Hans, he saw this online, and he's an entrepreneur, a businessman, and
I see the future on this one.
Yep, he just believed that there is a future, and we did our third setup with a full dozen people in March of 2020, and we have some video on the website of that, a short video, and the day later or a week later, COVID hit, and you couldn't have 10 people together, and the whole thing went on the... It was disheartening, to say the least.
You'll see that
I'm the one there with the blue shirt, which is a 9/11 shirt. I've met Richard Gage, and I know you have as well, at one of the red pills somewhere along the way, and... Yes, I've been in this movement for quite a while, for sure. And we just decided, my partner primarily, decided to kick this off again about a month and a half ago. Well, we've built two courts this year. We're on our second court this year, which is now aluminum, because the original ones were all wood.
Wait, heavy.
Very heavy panels. And there's four by eight panels on each side, and then the goals are 16 feet across. The bars are 16 feet across, and it's a kicking good fun. It really is.
Okay, now, what I had seen, you could rent them.
Yes.
What happened, the service was, I mean, I'm sure you can make it or buy it or whatever, but the service was that you could rent it for X hundreds of dollars a day or something.
Correct.
They would come and set it up.
Correct.
And they come, it's like, it's like getting a bounce house or something for your grandkids.
You similar, know? Yes.
And so how long does it take for you guys to set it up?
A couple of guys, younger guys, helps, yeah. Obviously.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm.
But we can do it in about an hour. And, again, this is a wooden court, so it's quite a bit heavier than our newest one that is made out of aluminum. And we're looking to have that set up by the end of next week, and just test the difference between the setups of the two. But we really feel like we've got an idea here that, you know, it could go bust, but it has a whole lot of potential in our opinion, or we wouldn't have put the money into it so far that we have. So,
you know, I'm thinking that even if you just built the court and put it on Craigslist to sell, people would buy it.
Well,
you know?
Just
give me. I want it.
Yep, we believe, and every day will tell.
Well, this has been, have you started, it looks like, you know, the Hoosball Association and League and all this other crap.
That is correct. Know. Again, Hans has put a tremendous amount of work into the back office piece, I guess, if you want to. I was a contractor and a real estate broker and fix and flipper for a lot of years, so I had the mechanical or the building ability to help him do this, and we've been in other business ventures over the years, but he was primarily the idea guy and has done all of the back office stuff to set up the patented the Hoosball name, National Hoosball Association, and he's got league rules and, you know, tournament setups and all this kind
Why
of stuff
Hoosball?
In the background.
What does the H stand for? What, human?
Human, yeah.
You know?
Well, and somebody told us,
we
were going to use H-O-O-Z, and we thought, you know, that might not work as well, but somebody today told us we should have done W-H-O. Like, who are those people? But,
yeah.
You know, we
that
could still...
That would have fell out of favor real quick here lately.
Well, we could... Maybe we can still grab that one if we have to. But this one is you know, it's where we're at today, and who knows what tomorrow will be.
Well, this would be awesome for, like, a festival like this and young kids. And, you know, how many places or times have you put it up and actually had families or sponsored company picnics?
We're less than a half a dozen. Our last one was last weekend. We did it for the Broomfield Chamber of Commerce, which is – Broomfield is just a suburb of the Denver area, northern Denver area. And we set it up for them. They normally had a annual picnic, and they've used other providers of this for over the last 2 or 3 years. And when my partner Hans talked to them, the gal that has run it for the last few years, she said that, you know, we've had issues with some of the ones standing up and lasting the entire 4 hours of their picnic or whatever. So they had construction issues or whatever. And I'm proud to say that ours stood up for the entire time last weekend and without any incident.
Yeah, no, that's what I'm thinking. Our kids, you know, doing this, it would be freaking toothpick.
Well, the most vulnerable part.
They're alphas, man. It'd be a thing.
The most vulnerable part, obviously, are the steel bars that go across it. If somebody was to hang,
they bend on those.
Yeah, and one of the rules is that you can't put your shoulders below the bar, or it's a penalty. And it was really instituted to keep people from going low and trying to hang on the bar. And whether it's going to work or not, only time will tell, obviously. But...
Yeah, I was immediately knew what this was
sure.
when I saw the thing, and I go, oh, that's cool, that's cool, because it's interesting that you can have a competitive sport like this in a small area and our kids are all soccered up.
I mean, yeah, you know, they're sure
it's a soccer thing. So this means that 60 whatever year old grandpa can play. And, you know, not die,
and
which doesn't matter to them, and they make me play anyway. But the thing is this is a, you know, and you got sponsors on it. Now, you're selling it the whole thing. You get it all nice and pretty. It's $6,000 delivered. But you can do a rental thing. How much do you rent?
I think we got $400 last week for the 4 hours that we... Well, maybe 500 because we had the $100 setup. I don't really.
Yeah, it's and again, almost. You know, I'm thinking it'd be. You know, we were even thinking of building it and then renting it out.
Yeah.
I mean, because when I saw this, I was like your friends, man. I'm going, I can see. I see some good there. You know, and COVID.
Well, that's what happened, and you know, shut us down. Absolutely shut us down for a year and a half.
Let's talk about, you know, we did enough commercial for you, you know. Now what I want to talk about is your awakening, how long you've gone to, you know, Jackalope and Midfest. And so my first question is why?
Well, my first Jackalope was last year in 2020 because of COVID. And
the only thing that was... going.
That's about it. That's
because there's nobody to cancel it.
And I can't.
Hey, you guys should cancel it. Who canceled? I don't know. I'm doing tour camping. I don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't even remember exactly how I heard about it. But I first got into this. I lost my wife to MS in 2005. Mm. And she suffered for 10 years with it.
Yeah, and I was thinking, MS, that's a long thing, man.
She was on over a dozen medications for much of the time, and it was, you know, you talk to the doctor, well, why are we, you know, giving her this medicine when it has side effects? And, well, it's to counteract the side effects of this one. I ended up losing her. Fortunately, I was able to keep her in her own, she passed in her own bed, and that was my goal at that point in life. But I read... Kevin Trudeau's book in 2007, which is Natural Cures They Don't Want You to Know About. And that book talks about the pharmaceutical industry, the FDA, and how they're in the pocket of. And it just was an eye-opener. And then I met Richard Gage. on 9/11 at one of the Red Pill events, G. Edward Griffin's Red Pill events. And so that has been my quest since about 2007, 13, 14 years now.
And Richard Gage of Architects and Engineers, 9/11 Truth, Architects, Engineers, whatever it is, and he just resigned in the last couple of days. Did you hear about this?
No, I hadn't. No.
I don't even remember what the issue was. He said something about he wasn't SJW enough or didn't go with the, maybe it was COVID or something like that, you know, and they said, well, the controversy is kind of, we're now, you know, he goes, I'm good. I'm, you know, I resign, you know, you know, now insulated and I go say what I want. And it was something that he wasn't in line with some government, whatever, and they felt that it distracted from his 9/11 work. That's all. I mean, we could pull it up, but yeah, I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this.
No, that's fine.
But it was, you know, it's typical Richard. You know,
he
wouldn't pull on stuff like that. He can suck it. So yeah, we'll look it up. But so 9/11 was your thing that got you woke up.
Again, with the pharmaceutical, I mean, the big wake up was with the pharmaceuticals and the FDA. I mean, you know. When I was growing up, and I'm one of nine kids, the middle kid of nine, a Catholic family, and, you know, my mom wouldn't let us watch All in the Family because it was too risque way back then. And when you started seeing the erectile dysfunction commercials every 30 seconds or every commercial break on live or on TV, you just knew that the pharmaceutical was running the whole show. At least that was my opinion.
You know what comes to mind? I remember a lot of people don't know. You know, this stuff, like late 90s or something, was first starting to become popularized and on TV. You know, a lot of people don't remember Bob Dole.
Yes.
And Britney Spears was in the same commercial.
Yes.
And he's like, ooh, damn boy.
Yep.
I mean, he actually saying this, right?
Yeah,
now you go to jail for saying crap like that.
Exactly.
You know, Britney Spears, he's like, ooh, damn boy. Viagra's got, you know, I'm going, okay, you know, I'm damn.
Yeah.
All right. I got a Richard Grove story up. Yeah, they're all video. They want to, you know, explain it to me. Mm. Richard Gage resigns from Architects and Engineers, the fringe elements involved. Yada, yada, yada. Well, I'll try and find, you know, what it was about. But he said something, and it was innocuous. I don't give a crap, you know, about something else. He actually had an opinion. And they're like, oh, hell no. So that's why he left.
Well, so I'm assuming somebody will pick it up and run with it. You know, it's quite
a... Yeah, it's a story on... Donna, it's on Freedom's Phoenix.
Yeah,
find it.
Send you a telegram.
Send me a telegram with it. We'll go ahead and add it to the archive for today's show so everybody doesn't yell at me. And then, so this telegram... Is it sent? So, yes. Okay, so I go into here. And story we have on Freedom 6. Why I'm going solo. As you can imagine, this has raised many questions, which I decided to wait until after the 20th anniversary date in order to address, so as not to distract from all of the important 9/11 Truth Movement events and activities. This statement is on my own behalf and not on behalf of AE 9/11 Truth, you know, Architects and Engineers. As you probably know by now, we have been working with Spike Lee for months on what was one of the greatest opportunities the 9/11 Truth Movement has ever had to reach a wide mainstream audience, which would have been the final segment of his video documentary that was aired by HBO on September 11th. That 30-minute segment, which included a dozen interviews with family members and technical experts, including myself, unfortunately was never broadcast. This action by Spike surely was at least in part due to enormous pressure from the powers that be, but my off-topic comments quoted in Slate Magazine's August 24th article, which they had to have made a major effort to find, was most likely a significant contributing factor. Spike may well have been upset to see my comments quoted in the article, since the first two segments of this mini-series, Epicenter, focused on the devastation, particularly by COVID-19, in New York City, in which he makes clear that he agrees with the official narrative on that subject. This was, of course, a great disappointment for all of us in the 9/11 truth movement, and of course for me personally, to have worked so hard to reach that historic moment only for it not to happen. In those moments of speaking off topic, I failed to remember that I represent architects and engineers who have signed our AE 9/11 truth petition, which is only about the destruction of the Twin Towers in Building 7 on September 11th, 01, and nothing else. Any opinions that I hold about COVID-19 issues or any other off-mission topic based on research that I do on my own time have absolutely no place in any interview I gave on behalf of 9/11 Truth. So he had an opinion about something that was outside of 9/11 and they don't like it. I'm sorry, blah, blah, blah. Our board did whatever. I'm stakeholders and I'm going and doing whatever I want on my own. So it was a COVID thing.
Yep. I'm not surprised. I'm not.
You know, the one thing that's interesting to me, I give you a perfect example, is Luke Radowski. Good friends with Luke, Mr. 9/11. He started 9/11, it was all 9/11, 9/11. And the government lied, and they're lying sacks of snot at 9/11 while he's locked down in Brooklyn and staying on, and he's scared because the government told him. And I'm going, really? I go, this, you know, so finally, Porkfest a year ago, you know, June, you know, he came out, you know, amongst his friend people, you know, and within a day, the mask came off, and, you know, he kind of chilled. Like, give me a hug, boy! You know, I'm like, come here! You know, and no, especially Ernie. I mean, you know, that kind of thing. So finally, he just kind of, it just, you start to realize it's all the same kind of people for the same ends and the same crap. And I'm like, holy crap, of course Richard Gage, would make the equation, which is what they freaked out about.
Evidently.
To the point that the 9/11 thing didn't get aired on HBO, done by Spike Lee. And the reason is when you marry those two, all of a sudden, not only is there a lot of overlapping issues and efforts and intent, it's the same freaking people, you
it
know?
Is.
So you're
absolutely.
Going, so I it's time to get Richard Gage on, Donna. Go ahead and, you know, try and get him scheduled, because damn.
Yep. No, I mean, it only gets, and I'm not the least bit scared of any of it. But I'm only scared for my grandkids, my family, and, you know, because that, it is. It all follows the same pattern, and I believe that eugenics is the end goal, and that's really.
Yeah, you know, you would think it's a wegenics. I can tell you that.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's not a themgenics.
Yes.
We don't want them.
That's
you know?
Correct.
You know, what's your criteria for eugenics? Is it like hair color or Aryan enough, or did they go, nah, it's just pretty much us and not you? I mean, they try and flower it, but you know, they're just really, nah, it's okay. We don't want to be, you know, like tested. We might come up short and have to, you know, kill grandson or something. You know, they just, it's us and not you. That's what. So
that's
it's
it.
Just like when you have at, you do studies of the professors at universities. You know, how many are conservative and how many are, you know, liberal, or how many, you know, and they're all, they got diversity. Oh, man, they got, you know, transgender female going to male, keeping mustaches and gotten the lesbian view of trans something, you know, but they're all liberal, you know.
Yep.
So when they say diversity,
anything goes.
They don't mean a thought.
Yeah, no, that's right. No, you can't think as long as it's, you know, if it's at all outside their narrative, then
sorry with that. Donna, switch headphones with him. Yeah. Put them on, too, because this thing, I think it's making noise.
I apologize.
No, that's not you. Okay, try that. Give me a test.
There we go. I can hear now on the right side. On the...
Okay. Every
That's
time we take a trip on the bus, it changes everything.
Well, you guys out there, I don't know whether you can see all of this, but it is pretty amazing what this guy's doing here, and his wife.
Yeah, it's we're having, we had a lot of help, a lot of people, because I would, freaking, for me, it'd be a transistor radio with a headset.
Yeah.
You know, which a lot of times it is. You know, it's that computer over there. But the it's been interesting going around the country and talking to people. And I think that's why I got a lot out of Derek's presentation, because Derek, you know, as much as he, you know, knows and an activist and been around, you know, he got to spend a lot of time in Texas and Mexico and Houston, Austin, that kind of stuff. When he went around the country and started actually doing these presentations to a wide variety of different groups and people, all of a sudden it was like, damn, you know, this is a little different, you know, the perspective you get.
One of the things he said that I maybe surprised me, maybe not, I don't know, but it is there is a lot more of us out there like this than we think. And the one thing he guarded against, I think his third point was, what was it, normalization? Don't get caught in the normalization that we're going back into, because the next thing is out
on
there.
More normal.
That's right.
Used to. It's amazing what you can get used to.
Yep.
You know, and I remember, you remember Roadhouse with Patrick Swayze? You ever watch
movie? You bet.
There was a thing, and he was talking to the other character, the other bouncer, older guy. Anyway, and they were at in two different. They're coolers. They go in to clean up a bar, you know, that kind of thing, and he was talking to this other guy, and he goes, you know, how's it going there where you're at in the city of whatever? And he goes, you know, nothing we have, you know, seen before. And then they said something like, it's amazing what you can get used to. And of course, in the background, you know, what was going on, there was all kinds of fights and this and that and everything. Yeah, same old, same old. And it's just what you can get used to, what gets normalized. And a lot of times, the normalization is an important thing. They want to make sure you're not shocked. So for the past decade, I have seen some crazy-ass crap in sitcoms, TVs, movies. Everything is to normalize it for you, to make sure you know, well, of course, there's Minority Report. And I remember when that Tom Cruise movie came out, Minority Report, we were doing Freeman's Phoenix. I remember we were doing the show, and it had to be not a whole bunch more than 10 years ago, because they made a big deal out of it like it was real. Minority Report.
Yep.
You know, pre-crime. It's saving, and all the advertisements and the slogans and everything were coming out. And you're going, what the hell? Well, immediately, you know, we can tell, you know, this is a promotion for something, a movie. But I'm going, this is what they're normalizing in our head. All the surveillance, retina scans, facial recognition, deliver you to the man in your electric autonomous car. I mean, y'all, I'm going, wow.
It's all coming true.
Normalization.
It's coming true.
That's exactly what Derek was talking about.
Yes, it is.
You know, to the point that not only you expect it, you want it, you need it. You know, you start thinking of the benefits. They're going to tell you what the benefits are. So your break was 9/11. And then, but you
building
said you
seven
met,
specifically, I think,
really?
Even more than.
Well, you said you met Richard, you know, Gage
I
at
did.
A Red Pill event.
Correct.
Why the hell did you go to a Red Pill event?
Well, I got a high school buddy originally sent me an email of his. Wasn't Red Pill then; it was Freedom Force, and of J. Edward Griffin's.
Right.
And then I got tuned into the book. The Creature from Jekyll Island, obviously, and the creation of the Federal Reserve. And that was my impetus to end up at a Red Pill. And Richard Gage, Sheriff Richard Mack, Dr. Shiva, did you get to see his presentation?
Yeah, we've had him
on
the show.
You have had him on
it,
yeah.
He just called me last Sunday or Monday.
Really, yeah.
Yeah, about what's going on in Maricopa.
Right. Well, I'm plugged into a lot of these just from Red Pill, kind of. Is really, I guess, where it started from, again, a high school buddy that I haven't – he lives in Greeley, which is, I don't know, an hour and 15 minutes or something from where I live. So we haven't even met for a while, but we got on this kick 20 years ago, maybe. Well – 13 years ago, 14 years ago, like I said, It was after my wife passed that I believe that I got into it. But, I mean, it just, everything starts to fit together when you, I'm here because of COVID. Obviously, that's how I ended up with Jackalope. And I'm here today because of COVID becoming normalized. And I know that's not that isn't what we want for the populace. We want the people to understand.
What do you think we're up against?
Well,
I mean, what's doing this? What?
The bankers. I mean, it all, in my opinion, comes from the financiers. There is a great series out there, probably heard of Wayne Jett and the Fruits of Graft is his series.
No.
On he's got a YouTube series, about 6 episodes, on his book that he wrote in, I think.
What do you mean had? Are they gone now?
Well, I haven't looked as of late, but his
Donna, get ready for this. What's it called?
The Fruits of Graft.
The
G-R-A-F-T.
Fruits of Graft.
Yes.
So
Wayne
the
Jett.
YouTube series and put it up on the
Wayne archive. Jett is the author of the book. And some guy out of Austin was his interviewer that does similar to what you're doing, who is in the crypto arena to some degree, because I've been a part of that since 2017 now as well. And it was an amazing interview. I mean, he said things like the SEC is not your friend. You know, it's out there for the people that run the show accredited investors and things like that. Again, it isn't to protect the little guy. It's out there to keep the
competition.
Exactly.
Maintain monopoly. You know, that's when the ICOs really started, you know, these initial coin offerings. And so a lot of people had opportunities, you know, to make some bank. And they did in the SEC. Oh, hell no, you're doing it wrong. You got to give us bank. Oh, and you got to be accredited investor, which means you got to have millions of whatever to even begin with.
Yep.
And they get all the benefit and screw you. And I'm going, wow.
It's the system is set up and we're playing into it every day. If we don't take Derek's advice and get out of it, get out. The phone, and I don't remember which one he mentioned, which is a non-Google phone. And I know he was selling them last night. And believe it or not, I got two of these stupid things now because I'm looking for the blue one that I had before I came and visited you.
No, it's laying around now.
Well, it's somewhere. And I mentioned that I went to visit Waldo, who lives in the neighborhood. And he's got a bug out place of a couple hundred acres that is absolutely unbelievable. And I even mentioned to him that we had talked, and he may be back. He's got a dad that's 95 and on hospice, and it's very last day. So he came back and got it. Well, if you remember, you weren't here last year for this event. I remember now. And
yeah, I was here. Well, I was here this last spring.
Spring, yeah, but not in October of last year. And I had originally met you at the 2020 Jackalope. And I didn't make the April one either. But I came here in October of last year. And met Waldo and the other people, Mike and the other people that live, you know, close by here. But Waldo brought out a flatbed trailer for us to have a stage on. And Destin did his thing, and Lisa, the gal from Freedom Cell in Tulsa, they did their thing on this trailer of Waldo's last year out there in the field because we didn't really use the pavilion here. And
they've made a lot of improvements even in the last 6 months here.
Unbelievable.
They got a beautiful pool. All of a sudden I go, there's a pool?
Yep.
You know, what the hell? And I remember them, you know, starting to build. So they're taking it serious here.
Yes, they are.
And I'm sure, you know, events like this don't hurt.
Oh,
And then it's Copperhead rally grounds or whatever, and there's some big Harley Davidson motorcycle thing that comes
here. They told me that they're not doing the motorcycles anymore because the two factions, and this is Paul, the guy that runs the place, and he said that there's just too many fights and whatever. The big thing that just happened a couple of weeks ago was the Harvest Fest. That is a weed group, and he said there was 1,600 people here, something like that. So no fights, exactly. That is right. And
they're like, yo, we should fight tomorrow. We'll get to it. You know?
Yeah, exactly. Well,
Harley drinking with some whiskey and Jack Daniels, that is
a different story.
Different
story. Well, in the week before, if you look at the sign on the school on September 11th, here they had they have an annual car show. One of the guys in town the owner Travis of this place, his dad has classic cars, and so they have a classic car thing. And the one thing I thought when I saw that sign out there is, you know, next year I'm going to come for a whole month and catch the classic car show, the Harvest Fest, and the Mid Fest next year. So
there's getting to be a lot of, these things really didn't exist.
Oh, they didn't.
They did. In the 90s, I remember going through, and they always collapsed because they tried to overorganize it.
Right.
And it was always somebody wanted to be in charge and make money and incorporate of the LLC of the whatever the hell, and it always went bad.
Right.
You know, and when they started doing the Porcupine Freedom Festival, that was where people go, wow, this is awesome. We can just go and do whatever we want. And then they started to go the 501c3 thing. They wanted to try and organize it. So then it kind of split into Fork Fest, Pork Fest. And that's when, 10 years ago, that we decided to do Jackalope. Because I go, I want to do an experiment. And Alma Summers, she really took it and wanted to she's trying to organize it. I'm just, whatever, After 10 years, I kept it unorganized enough that I'm like, all right, you can try your way now. You can do whatever you want. I won't bitch. But I'm telling you, I know it's going to happen, But 10 years, I win, You have a successful growing thing. Nobody's in charge. Everybody is. Peace out. Well, when do I speak and how do I get the mic? Yeah, I don't know. I mean, bring your own speaker and put out flyers. However you want to do it. And which is the same thing here. And Mike, when he went, he's like, well, I can do this,
That's
and then a lot of people go, well, I can do that, So they, a lot of these happen in the Anarchazona, Anarcha Vegas, Anarcha whatever, and, Anarcha Poco, all these things kind of, on the same, mindset. Well, Anarcha Poco, they went the other way and started getting more organized, and they run into the same problem. And, of course,
I heard COVID. The VIP ticket was $1,250 this year.
Yeah, no, it's
out of control for them.
Yeah, no, it's got, that's whatever. But this is exactly what we were trying to, demonstrate, is that if you want it to be a long-term, forever, always, you can't shut it down. Even COVID can't shut it down. On forest land, it can't shut it down. I guess they could, but we weren't paying attention. So, we just go because there wasn't anybody to cancel it. So the thing that we, only thing we were worried about is if for fire danger, but that's right in the middle of the monsoon, which is one reason why we picked those weeks, is because a bunch of freaking anarchists out there with, flares, which is, happened. And, because, damn, can't have nice things, man. Because, but that's all part of the experiment. And what happened is the ones that tried to be more organized would fade away. Burning Man has been canceled for the last 2 years.
Really? Okay.
Burning Man.
A bunch of people
came to Jackalope this year were from Burning Man.
Yep.
And they're going, we're going to have a, unsanctioned burn. I'm like, there's a sanctioned burn? wow, you guys are killing me. Yep. So this is why, and Jackalope was there as an inspiration for a lot of people because it was there. And, Vegas and Colorado and a lot of the Southwest, people came from all over. This one woman, she flew up from Mexico. People come from Europe. I'm going for Jackalope. It's just dry camping of, you don't bring it, you ain't got it, And that's what they're looking for. And everybody really has a, I don't know, an epiphany, a life-changing experience by going to just in the woods. I mean, it's really not, you know, that. I mean, it's Baca Meadow is very sandy, so when it rains, it's not muddy or anything. But there's no facilities.
Right.
You know, there's no water, there's no bathrooms, there's no nothing. You got to bring
off the grid. If you stay in the valley, you're off the grid. If you walk to the top of the mountain or
maybe
drive,
you'll get a cell phone.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, exactly.
Now, did you see the sheriff's department came this year?
Oh, no, I didn't
see
that.
Yeah. They sent some. Well, I did a live show with the chairman of the Chamber of Commerce of the Heber-Obergard area there.
Oh, really? Okay.
So within hours after we did it and talking about what we've been doing 10 years, we've been working with them and bring the bus and interview all the people that wouldn't comply with COVID businesses and all that kind of crap, right? So I have him on and I go, you know this. You know, I just want to, in retrospect, you think this was on purpose to kill small business? He goes, yep. And I'm going, oh, that's good. So then, of course, the sheriff's department, well, they got to send somebody out. They got to go explain it to you, right? So they come out, and this one woman, she gets out. She's looking for somebody to talk to. Well, Mike talked to her, and she's going, yeah, you see on our little app thing right here on our phone deal, it says that there was a drop 911 call from right here, okay? And it was by the road where the cemetery was there or something. There's a from the homesteaders that used to own Baca, the Baca family. And I'm going, well, the first question I got, I want to know exactly where they were standing so I can get cell coverage. That's what I want to know. Okay.
Exactly.
I say you're
perfect
full of
answer.
Shit.
Perfect answer.
I say you're full of crap.
Yep.
There's no way he's going to go right. Really?
Yep.
I mean, you can't come up with something better than that. You got to go to the top of that mountain over there to get any kind of cell signal so anybody can do Bitcoin transactions and stuff. So I'm just going, yeah. So this has been, but after 10 years, the locals there, they know who we are. They know it because in the first few years, they were hutting with their M16s. Come on, explain it to you. And we were like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm just camping. Oh, don't beat me, Then they're like, damn it, they hate when there's nobody in charge.
Yep.
So then they want to know who had the porta potties.
Yes, okay.
We go, Jack. Elope, I don't know Jack. That's why the shirt this year was I don't know Jack.
Oh, I did. I missed that.
Yeah, no, I got one back there.
Well.
So this is an experience you have with that, and you come to MidFest. So MidFest is kind of the same, I imagine.
It is.
Well,
it
has an actual facility.
Right. That's the beauty for me as an older guy is I don't have to use the little bathroom I got in my camper, I can use a shower in here that's full function. And
we're kind of off-grid, self-contained bus of ha-ha-ha-ha-ha. But it's always nice to be able to just, plug in.
Yes, it is.
Instead of depending on solar and generator and all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
But we're pretty good. We rough it pretty nice. I extended my time a little bit more. I can wait out something, and get better
I believe.
Deals, Well, what do you think is going to happen on the deals? I mean, you were talking about some of the guys here and everything that are really thinking bug out, but they're starting to get older. A lot of the guys that have been preparing for this stuff going, this is what's going to happen.
Yep.
I read Creature from Jekyll Island back in the 70s. I was listening to Ron Paul in the 80s. I was just, we're getting ready. And then when it happens, they're 72 and a half years old. And they're like, I ain't getting on that ladder anymore. What do you think they're going to do?
I'm still on it. And I know some of the people here are. And I met another Art from Arkansas. Art from Arkansas, and he was pretty impressed with my flyer here because he is right down there at Bentonville where the Walmarts are, and he made mention to the money that is in that corridor, and he said, these billionaires would put one of these up on their property, and it sounded like I asked him if he wanted to be a sales agent because that's the kind of people you meet here, just people that are fully aware Americans that want to stay free and not be told to wear a mask ever again. And
I'm thinking they're not going to be sprinting down to the county, the state to get a permit for the next whatever business that they're doing anymore.
Right.
It's like, screw you. And this Hoosball thing, I remember when you do the, because we got 15 gazillion grandkids, there's always somebody's doing some bounce house or something sometime.
Yep.
And these guys, I mean, they're not free, but they're not, oh my God, expensive. They'll come and set it up like a Friday night and come get it Saturday evening or Sunday morning or
something.
Now,
currently
like that.
That's in the Denver market. We're not doing that nationally yet, but yeah, that's the plan. I mean, as I said,
it's the point that I wanted to make. When they do it, it's usually some Hispanic family that has a box truck that they come and some of their buddies come out and they do it, and you pay them cash, and I'm not thinking they're reporting it that much. You know what I mean? They're the cat business.
Well, I went to Wyohacking. Have you heard of that in Laramie last year? Week
Texas?
The last week of September is a hackathon in the University of Wyoming has held now for 4 years running, and
where the FBI recruits kids.
Well, the group that was presented was Cardano and the ADA token. Mm-hmm. They had a special summit about what they're doing with that business and everything, which I found very fascinating. The one thing I found more than anything else is the young minds that are out there. And I got a great sense that the entire Cardano ecosystem is to enable freedom seekers, as opposed to being a company that is like a Microsoft or whatever that is run for the profit. They've created a foundation that does a whole lot of work outside of in Ethiopia and, you know, places around Africa and places like that. And they have over $1 billion in this fund to help out. Educate more than anything and provide electronic cell phones or, you know, a connection to the grid, the, you know, the internet or whatever. And the most amazing thing to me is that Charles Hoskinson, I think is his last name, lives in Colorado Springs, and I hadn't realized that. The foundation is set up globally, you know, out of one of these African countries or someplace, but there was about 400 or 500 people there, all in blockchain computer. The hackathon is for programmers, because they had competition. They had over $100,000 worth of prizes for programmers to, you know, come up with solutions utilizing the blockchain.
Is that the first hackathon you've been to?
Fourth. Well, it's the second one I've been to.
I'm going to make a statement. You tell me how much you think this is true. The hackathon, when DEF CON really started getting going, God, early 90s that I even heard about it or something back in Las Vegas, they would have these kinds of events and so on, and what would happen is the FBI would be there recruiting 13-year-olds that know what the hell is going on. Well, guess what? You're working for, or you can go to jail. I mean, you know, lot of times. And then there was when the crypto world really started getting going, and they would have hackathons, and I would, you know, speak. All right, you know, when I think, you know, you guys, you know, tell me your spiel, I'll be around, and I think you're cool. We'll do a show, and the winners will come on and be on the show, you know, that kind of thing. So we did that a couple of times, the Texas Bitcoin conferences, and they'd have hackathons. And then I saw what happened. They would go, yeah, it's $250,000, 4 prizes, $1 million. And we're going to add a fifth one. Now it's $1.25 million because there were a bunch of cool ones that we wanted to fund anyway. And I'm going, why? You know, why would you increase to, you know, do another one? Then I realized what was going on. It was an interview. They were giving them, you know, a contract, a deal, like they were a rock band or something, and then they got all the profit. You know, the rock band got screwed, you know? So that's what was going on.
Really?
These hackathons are interviews.
Right.
You know, and if they can, you know, make a fix for something Well, then they get a contract to do that, or they want the fixer. They get stock in the whatever the hell it is that they're doing, or an ICO. You know, they get a coin token of the whatever. And when they're doing crypto, it was easy to do that.
Sure.
They go, it's easy for us. We just made up a crypto. You know, that's how you get paid. So it was. I can see it happening. A lot of these young guys don't care. They just wanted to, you know, meet guys and play and do whatever. But I can see what was going on. These guys are being exploited, which, you know, they, you know, whatever. But just, you know it going in. That's what's going on. And then you got law enforcement or these other government agency alphabet soup or whatever. They see some you're working for us or you're not working, you know, that kind of thing.
One of the things that the sense that I got, and that your scenario doesn't surprise me one bit with what I know that's going on out there, but the sense that I got from the Cardano group, and again, a lot from the CEO, as I mentioned, is that he's
savvy.
He's very savvy, but the difference from what they're trying to do now is the decentralization of information.
Well, one of the representatives out of Denver of Cardano contacted me, and we talked and so on, and I haven't pressed it because I don't think they're ready yet, was they wanted to do an NFT of the Ron Paul Revolution logo.
Oh, okay. You know? Yeah.
And I go, that might make some money if I ever claimed any ownership of it. I mean, I don't care. You know, Fred can do it, you know. But then they want to have some kind of a validation or story, or I approved it, you know, that kind of crap. And do an NFT of that. And I go, okay, you know, well, when you get this, you know, let me know of whatever. And I've been contacted since. I'm just – because I don't think they're really ready for prime time with a lot of this NFT stuff.
Well, that is very new, and I've only got into, and I haven't really got into NFT.
It's like a digital baseball card or whatever.
Exactly. They had the very first thing when you walked into the arena for this Cardano Summit was a gal there, I think out of Austin, Texas, who had painted a portrait that was about 5x5 or something, you know, and she had it set up there, and they were doing an NFT on it. They are, you know, one of the first. She's got a young friend guy that is, you know, pretty in tune with all of that, how it works, programming wise or whatever else. And that was again, I just got a sense that what they're doing here is not controlled by the haves. It's more decentralized
Well, I'll tell you how bad it is. It's like Hunter Biden selling his $2 million, you know, watercolor, you know, I threw it with a sponge on whatever the hell, you know. It's just a way to get money and pass out and be legit and whatever. And NFTs, even easier. I don't even have to paint.
Sure.
You know?
No,
so I'm going, you know, it's just, they don't do whatever the hell they want. And when we start getting creative, you're not allowed, you know. So let's get back to the, you know, one thing I want to finish up on, you know, and get your comment on. You know, this community thing, you know, if you were to make some kind of move or support moves or people doing stuff, you know, what would it be?
Well, the thing that I've realized more than anything, I guess, when I come to these things is how connected I am still to the grid and the, you know, the Googles and the Microsofts and every other damn thing out there. I mean, I've heard of Lent. I was a COBOL programmer back in the 70s, and gave that up in the 90s to get into real estate, and ever since had a better handle on the laptops and desktops and so forth, you know, PC computing. And but as to go back to it as a programmer is just, I'm not ready to sit in front of the screen again for too many hours a day like I did when I was doing it full time. And yet, the community that we have here, I learned about the Linux operating system and how to remove myself from Microsoft and a lot of that other stuff that that is corporate controlled, and the openness of the Linux operating system and the ability to get off of the grid. The biggest factor that I think all of us have in the other world, and that is the fiat currency banking system. I mean, I own ATMs, and I have to go on a regular basis and fill them up, you know, with cash, with fiat money. And that, one of the days I'm going to go to withdraw to put into the, I mean, we've probably all seen the book, you know, when the ATMs go dark. I've got that book several years ago. And the possibilities of that are just more realistic day.
No, that's a definite. Yeah, it's going to be, you know, it's when they, you know, you're taking the new purple script GoldmanSachs.gov coin, universal basic in your smartphone, you know, money now, aren't you? After the ATMs are closed for 3 or 4 days.
Yeah.
You know, this is so, it's so predictable. And you need to have, I mean, even just a little bit of food just so
better,
that you can go camping for a month and just chill and come back and see who's left. I mean, something, you know. Because it's going to happen. It's going to get scary. It's going to be, I'm feeling, a lot of people, oh, you're on a bus, and how's the bus? Oh, my God, the bus. I'm going, I don't know. I'm pretty comfortable, and I feel a lot secure.
Yep.
I feel a lot freer, I can tell you that.
Yep.
You know, so there's the, you know, convenience. So we need to get a place to start doing the experimentation on the aircrete dome building that we're doing.
Yep.
And this has been a decision in just the last couple of weeks that, you know, we know exactly what we're doing, when, where, and how, what we got, production we have, and how many, you know, homes we're going to be building where, and all that kind of stuff. So I got to get on it.
Right.
Because starting May, you know, it's, you know, rock and roll. And in Arizona, it'll be even be sooner than that. But
sure,
we have to have the technique and the machine and the equipment and everything all done by May, when we bring this to Washington State and start mass producing. And then from there, it'll go, like I was talking to Derek Merriam last night, and they've known about our dome stuff before and everything. And I go, look, you know, we are building machines. The machine, it's not about building rockets to go to Mars. It's about building the robot to make the rockets, you know?
There
so
you
that's
go.
What we're doing. It's not about building the dome, you know, in the house. I can do that. That's not the point. It's the machine that does it really fast and cheap. That's
the robot.
The robot. But, you know, we need to have at least the, you know, the mixer, and you get the recipe down right. And, you know, we already have the stamp press for actually making the domes. We've been doing that for a while. But, you know, how do you, there's just a lot of questions in there. And so that's one thing that I think is missing from a lot of the stuff that we do is the actual building of dwellings.
Right.
You know, a lot of people, they're doing a lot of things, but a fast, quick, cheap, I don't have a mortgage, boom, I have a place, and a month I'm done, and I'm don't have, you know, interest
well,
to the man.
There's not enough Habitat for Humanity groups out there, and to do that for everybody that needs housing, obviously. And
well,
affordable housing is going to be...
Everybody needs housing.
Exactly.
Everybody needs to get out from under a mortgage. Everybody that wants to go grow food needs to get out of the freaking cities. Everybody's going to be moving to somewhere like, you know, your friend up here that has a little bit and kind of, man, let's rock and roll. And you're going, yeah, well, I need to live in something.
Yep.
So what are you doing, pulling single wides around everywhere? You know, you got to have buses all the time. I mean, you need to be able to freaking build.
Yeah,
you know,
you definitely do. Well, I think I mentioned that I'm working with another business partner on hemp, Adobe, which we can use in 3D printing of houses, and we're really more focused currently on similar to the Hoosball panels, 4x8 sheets of building material with hemp that have all of the electrical wires and the
plumbing
and everything inserted in these panels that then can be used to kind of build a block house out of hemp. And
there's so many great ideas out there, and you go, yeah, I want to do this, and permitting, not building codes. Hey, you're not allowed.
Yep, that's the rub, is the regulations and how far we can take it. I mean, you're talking about your formula. I mean, that we've got individuals that already say they've got this formula, that, but it hasn't come to fruition as yet.
Yeah, I'm willing to press that, because a lot of times it's just general public opinion and awareness, and that they're stopping and they're just being buttheads for the man. And so I'm going, oh, no, you got to do it this way. It's got to cost five times as much, and you got to get a mortgage with the central bank if that's the way it works. And I'm going, really? Oh, you're all Mr. Environmental, right? You're going to save the planet, right?
Right.
You're all about people, right? No, you're not.
No, you're not.
I want everybody to look.
They're all about money.
Look over there. You see that over there? Scumbags. Yep. More scumbags. I got another line of scumbags, you know? So that's where I come in. I'm going to be a butthead about it. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to learn a fight, because when we want to do it, or a lot of places you want to do it, they ain't going to matter anyway,
right?
You know? Hello to my little friend, you know? We're just in our canyon of feeding ourselves, and you can go away now. I tell you what really got me is in Washington State, they had guys going around with GPS things on their back, and they were geolocating all the grain silos. And when you build one, you get the county guy come in, okay, it's not going to fall down, you can use it, peace out. And he'd leave, and here come this other guy with the GPS coordinates of it. And I'm like, what the hell was that about? And they're going, we got to find out where all the grain is.
Yep. Yeah. We need to. They
Why?
Know. They know about all of it. And you just have to. You really have to sit and think about how all of this can come about if there isn't some kind of a plan. You know, this is not happenstance. I mean, most people believe it is, but in my opinion, there's a plan, and these guys know what they're doing and have
everything. You ain't in it.
Yeah, and we are not in it. We are not in it. They're, I mean, and I go, I genocide or eugenics or whatever you want to call it. It's population control, in my opinion, that they're really, I mean, who knows what these vax numbers, these vaccinated people, we already know there's tens of or hundreds of thousands of deaths from the vaccination that mainstream media is not really talking about or anything. But I mean, I hear so many people talk about 6 months down the road it's going to be millions. And you know, somebody said the other night, you know, it could get bad enough where we have to concern ourselves with burying bodies. I mean, that's Orwellian. I mean, to get to the point to think that the average people like us have to get to that point is just, I mean, it's Orwellian. It is.
How do you dispose of?
Yes.
Are you going to go Soylent Green? It's people.
Yep.
There's a lot of places you can go dark and thought. And I share this with the audience quite a bit. When Donna, just a couple months ago, she got really mad at me. Because at one time she was, like, in a funk, you know, depressed and going to bed. And she's just like, well, what's wrong? She goes, they're really going to do it.
Yeah. No.
And I go, yeah, isn't it awesome? You know, she's like, she got mad at me. And I'm going, look, if you can see it, and they're going this hard, this fast, they bit off more than they can chew. I mean, now everybody sees it. I go, this is what we've been spending 30 years preparing for. Is, you know, how many minds we can free, how many people can do it. Now it's how many asses we can save.
Yep.
You know, now we're actually, you know, the solutions towards, for the last year and a half, you know, I, and especially me and Corbett, and we do a weekly show, and it's all about solutions.
Yep.
You know, we're just like, nope, 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 nope. You know, what are we doing to fix this? And that's why, you know, he and I, you know, give each other the time, even though we're really busy, to do outside of our regular times and so on, is because, you know, we're focused on the solutions. And he's a big fan of Derek and John.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
That, you know, the
like I said, that was a powerful presentation last night. And I mean, I heard it last year, and there was a
I've
lot less
people.
I've seen
a lot of them. Last night was probably the best one that I've seen.
Wow.
Because it was for us, people that understood the language.
Yeah. Well, and one of the numbers he gave was, a year ago, there was 300 people involved, and there's almost 30,000 today. So it is, if it's tenfold in another year, it's going to have an impact. it's certainly going to have it.
Yeah, that's one guy I want to talk to, Steve, that did the intentional community telegram of something, you know. And a good friend of ours that has one in Washington, Ernie's going to be there. He has pictures of our spread here. Just, you know, have him show you.
Right.
And I go, well, I guess that's permission for me to show.
Yep.
You know, whatever.
Sounds like an invitation
to
me.
All right, man, you want to know what's up, you know, because there's a – you know, we're sending people up there. They're building a community.
I got to believe that there's a whole lot of Floridians that are, a lot of them are in nursing homes, and we know that. But yeah. I got to believe that there is a group of pre-sellers, whatever you want to call them, in that community, especially because they didn't have the lockdowns and so forth that the rest of the country had to the degree that a lot of the rest of the country did, and yet they're as smart there as they are in the rest of the world. So I just have to believe that there are those kind of communities there that are already off the grid. And there's, I know, well, you talked about the Burning Man, and I remember hearing somebody talk about that from Jackalope the previous year. And from Florida, I mean, they were talking about groups like this meeting in Florida. And I've got friends out there, but I haven't been out there for 20-some years. So,
well, I'm originally from Florida. I moved from Dade City, which is kind of like 35 miles northeast of Tampa, and Central Florida when I was 12 in the early 70s. So my father, you know, his family is from there. So I'm familiar, you know, from a 12-year-old perspective.
Sure,
and then
sure.
I went back, you know, when I was 15 for a couple of months. And back to Arizona, where my mother's side of the family is. And my impression of Florida is that it's very diverse. There is, you can't, when they say, Florida man does, you know, whatever. Well, which Florida man? Because, I mean, you know, there's a bunch of different kinds of Florida men.
Yep.
But, retirees definitely is a big thing.
You bet.
Hispanic community is big there.
Yep.
The migrant workers, the black community, they, you know, certainly in the 60s, 70s, they were, you know, heavy in the citrus picking production and so on. You have Cubans. I mean, that was the big deal. There's not a big Oriental community. You know, am I supposed to even say that? Asian, whatever.
Right.
I get yelled at. And then
I'm sure they have their place.
Yeah, whatever, you know. Yeah, no, I'm sure, but that was never me growing up.
Sure, exactly.
It was the black community, Hispanic community, Cuban, and you know, I don't know, Caucasian, whatever the hell that means. And the but each, because there's 67 counties in Florida, which in Arizona, you know, is 15. You know, so the 67 counties are all little fiefdoms. So everything's a county.
Right.
And I've learned that during this COVID thing, it's all county. They invaded the county level, you know, because they have, you know, administrative authority at the county level. They got a shiny badge, you know, I rule you permit system, county.
Right.
Even though it's really state enacted legislation, they got legislation to kind of empower these shiny badgers at the county level, and then here they come. You know, I could see it coming, and I'm just like, look, man, I'm telling you what's going to be. It's a county thing. And it's whatever. So but I lived it, and one reason I was so sensitive to it, my father was a county sheriff, a deputy sheriff in Pasco County, which is in Central Florida. And I was like, man, I know what an authoritarian is. Like, you give him a badge and a gun.
Right.
I'm like, damn, man, I would never have done that. You obviously don't know him, you know. So, you know, I've kind of been sensitive to this authoritarian thing. It probably had a lot to do with it.
We need Richard Mack back then. The Sheriff Mack, or Sheriff Mack.
I know Sheriff Mack pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, and I know each other well. And because we were working together when he was still sheriff back in Safford.
Really?
Yeah,
okay.
In Arizona.
Yeah, well,
we were all over.
Yeah.
And Arpaio hated him because he'd get more attention than him for more than a week.
Yeah.
You know, and that'd freak out Arpaio, you know. He's just so.
I believe.
That's so Arpaio. But anyway, so Arpaio and I were friendly, and we knew each other from 92. So it's I know all these guys, but it's still their position. And that's one thing Sheriff Mack made a big deal out of, is that the sheriff is the highest ranking authority. And once we schooled Arpaio on that, oh, really? Oh, watch this. I mean, you know, it's just, you know, some people, you know, take that power totally differently, you know. And so I'm not really big on that power because you can't always count on it being our, you know, Sheriff Mack or an Arpaio.
Right.
You know?
It's the one that has the biggest gun, and you can't always count on what side they're on. That's true.
Yeah, man. Yep. I got all kinds of pile stories, but
I can imagine.
You know, the big, you know, thing takeaway that I get from this last year is that people are starting to realize that it's really up to them.
Yep.
You know, and their close neighbors,
has
friends, and
has
and that the government's not here to help you.
Yep.
You know, and so I'm wondering how this will turn out, that general public opinion will manifest itself in another year. But I already know what the solution is decentralization.
Yep.
You know, down to the individual, small community, whatever. And a lot of that is you got to have a place to live.
Right.
And, you know, on Pirates Without Borders, we have these different categories, like communication, which we focus on IPFS and the abilities with that. And then, you know, energy, where, you know, I'm always getting the next latest greatest on that, you
right.
know.
Yep.
And solar, especially in Arizona, it'll do its job. Everybody
yep.
bitch, and I'm like, hey man, if it gets me decentralized off, I got paid $30,000 to bring in the bite me, you know, I'd rather put that in than I don't have a bill, you know. So that, then transportation, I'm not, you know, big on, I mean, I push the pedal, it goes, you know, but electrified vehicles gets me off of their grid. If I'm generating my own electricity.
Sure, yeah. If you don't need the petrol.
I'm done.
Yep.
If I don't need it, it's not like I mean, you know, if I need it, I need it. But if I don't need it, even better, you know. So, and then, you know, medicine, health, get off of the permit of the man, and I don't need permission to slip away. So each one of these categories, transportation, education, automation, you know, build the ship, food, medicine. I mean, all these things are the same thing. And one of the categories is shelter.
The most important. It really comes down to that being the most important, because
people don't have it, want it, I can guarantee
that's right.
That.
Well, if you are in the cold area of the country and don't have it, you don't
or
last.
Or in the hot.
Or I mean, in the hot, that's right.
If I was in Phoenix right now, I'd be freaking, screw you, man. I'm looking for the mountains.
Yeah, exactly. You have to have that weather control or you're...
uncomfortable.
Yes, you are very uncomfortable.
Yeah,
and maybe not survivable. That's
what
it ultimately
is. Well, what is your living circumstance? You know, you're in Colorado.
I'm in Colorado. I have a few acres south of the city, not far enough out. I'm only 3 miles from the C-470 loop that goes around the outer edge. And yet I have no neighbors to speak of. I am right on a corridor, Highway 85 corridor, that is
developing.
Yeah, developing, and they a couple of years in 2012 they widened that to 4-lane, and the few neighbors I did have were closer to the highway, and they ended up being easement out, if you know what I mean. And so I'm up there by myself, and I actually have more acreage around me that is state-owned that I hope at some point in time I'm
you're kind of buffered.
Yes, but my tractor sits on it, and some of the other kind of stuff that I've got a tenant. I've been a landlord, again, real estate broker, and a landlord and a fix-up guy, and so I still have some tenants that live in trailers and things like that, and yet, like I said, I'm still very much connected to the grid with 3 phones, you know, Google phones, and my laptop is still Windows, and, you know, all of that. So the things that I'm learning here are, in my opinion, great for anybody that really wants to remove themselves from a lot of that, to be more off the grid, if you want to go to that point.
You know, at least be aware of what's available, you know, work it, know how to do it, and be able to, you know, share this knowledge, technology with other people, to be able to even communicate when, you know, the things happen. because I see the attack on communication and us getting together, and that's why they shut down. You know, you can go BLM protest, but you can't go to church or the pub. I mean, you know, I'm going, what's that about, man? There's a communication thing going on here. So a lot of these things, I'm glad to see so many people take it seriously, and they see that this is a thing, and, you know, they need to have this kind of knowledge to make their life better in the future. And I'm looking forward to that. I'm glad you're doing that. We got to get the next guest. But,
sure.
You know, I'm glad you're staying with this and coming out and visiting and meeting. And next time we see each other, I think we'll talk again.
You bet.
I want to see how your perspective is going and see how the hoosball is doing.
You bet.
That's cool. Yeah, you make it a light aluminum kind of put it on a trailer in the business kind of deal. That'd be cool.
Refill.
I'll find out where the guy is. At least I want to do it.
Yep.
You know, sometimes with the family, that'd be awesome.
Yep.
Well, thanks for coming on and talking with me.
You bet.
I'm glad that we had this time because there is a tapestry of people that when I talk to them, and we're going to be talking to some a Romanian couple, it is the commonality of their thought process is interesting, but the diversity of it too. And it's what, from whatever circumstances, that they realize what's really going on and who did it and what we can look forward to and we got to prepare for. And we just need to inspire others just to know what you know and where to go look. And yours was 9/11.
Yep, that. The loss of my wife to the FDA.
You know, I'll do it.
That had a lot to do with it for sure. But the real awakening was 9/11 and Building 7 for sure.
As with a lot of people. Thanks, Al Smith. You know, wait a minute, let me get to Al Fritz. And you want me to get a phone number or anything, you know, contact you?
It's on the website. Hoosball Association, yeah.
All right, go there.
Certainly go check that out. The pictures, the drone pictures that we just put up are really pretty fantastic. And you can certainly get a hold of me and contact there. And if you have interest in, being a sales agent for us, we're all about that. So we do pay commissions. So
yeah, it's just something to pay attention. This might be something for somebody. I was interested in it. Hoosballassociation.com. H-O-O-S, ball, like in foosball. You know, hoosballassociation.com. Thanks, Al.
You bet.
Al Fritz.
Thanks, Ernie. Appreciate it.
You bet.